tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Jared. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Everybody ready? So let's start the meditation. Prayer for people who don't know it, there should be cards in front of your seats, or you can read off the wall here. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light to those who are lost, sick, and dying, and find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Jerry to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. Reread this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. My name is Jerry. I'm a recovering alcoholic. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the differences long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to AirPlay or meeting mode, or just turn it off. It's been a real treat to have Joe at my home group for the last 5 weeks. Today's week five, and you know, he speaks the language of the heart, and he leaves his heart up here every week. So with that, I'll give you Joe B.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it, brother. I'm an alcoholic and a member of the Wednesday Night Study Group. My name is Joe. Hi, everybody. It's really an honor to be here, and thanks for inviting me back for one more week. And hopefully I'll make sense tonight, and you'll invite me back next week, because next week is when we're going to really discuss this thing taking off. Let me just get situated here. Because I don't really talk about my opinion much at all, really. I mean, I do, you know, in conversations with people. Because I got a lot of opinions, but they're not going to serve you at all here. But I really believe that the thing that we need to speak about when we get up here is how we came to have a relationship with God. And that's what it asks us to do. You know, when we share our personal stories, we talk about that way we come to have this relationship. And, you know, I don't know of any other better way on planet Earth than the steps that are in this book in order to have this relationship. Because I got here the way I got here, the way I thought about life, the way I, you know, thought was what was important and what was, you know, going to satisfy me and make me fulfilled, make me whole and accomplished and successful and all these things. And of course, I was taught that stuff growing up as a kid, as we all are. You know, I believe we come into this world probably the most spiritual, loving being that we ever were. And then we get contaminated with a lot of stuff. You know, we get influx with information, right and wrong and good and bad and the way to pursue and, you know, what's important and what's not. And, you know, all the stuff that we take as gospel, I believe. You know, we're really not in the position to negotiate or, you know, have an opinion about things. So what we're taught really has a powerful impact on our lives, and it sticks with us for a long, long time. Carl Jung, when he was telling Roland Hazard in Switzerland, when he was treating him, we talked a little bit about him last week, He said that, you know, he told Roland had treated with him for a year, and he got drunk on the way back, and he went back to Dr. Young. And he says, "My God," he says, "what happened?" He says, "You need to tell me what happened." And he goes, "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and I've never seen one single case such as yours recover." You know, and this guy felt like the gates of hell had closed on him. Think about it. If we came in here and we said, you know, or they told us, "Look, you know, you're going to die. Your death is imminent. The thing that you harbor within you is terminal. It's fatal, and there's no way out except to just stop drinking. And by the way, how you view life and everything about life and everything you know and everything you feel about it is going to stay the same." I'd say, "Give me a drink." I was dying when I got here. I hated my life. I don't know how it is for you, but I was so broken from all the things that I thought that were in my mind. That was this, you know, they talk about this constitution, this set of rules, principles, and guidelines, and I like to add principles and beliefs, by which a man governed their life. Well, mine was all screwed up. Mine was very materialistic, very worldly, very driven by selfishness and self-centeredness, greed, lust. I was terribly inconsiderate. I was a habitual liar. I coveted the things you had. I coveted the things I had. I envied what you had. I was extremely jealous in my relationships. Very possessive, very defensive, very prideful. You know, I had to, but I didn't know this. I thought the problem was you. You see, I lived by that this constitution, this set of rules, guidelines, and principles, and ideas and beliefs by which I governed my life. It's how I executed life. It's how I navigated through life with you, with all my relationships, on how I dealt with relationships, on how I dealt with success, on all the pursuit of everything. This was my core. This was who I had become. Well, I mean, by the time I got here, I had a pile of evidence. I told you last week that everything is born in thought. So we think, and that creates a feeling or emotion. The feeling or emotion creates an action, causes us to take action. Thus, we get a result. Well, by the time I got here, my results were disastrous. I wanted to die. I wanted to end my life. I hated who I had become. I couldn't even look in the mirror. I created a lot of pain. Because in the pursuit of everything, I hurt everyone. You can't get what you want out of a rock. You got to get it out of somebody. A living, breathing, fellow creature of God. Right? So I had developed this constitution that was defective. Now listen, you know, the first step of the first step, the second part of that step, just is almost equal to the first part about being powerless, the inability to stop when we start, and the inability to stay stopped. Right? Can't stop when I start, can't stay stopped. No human being has been able to keep me stopped. But they also say this, and we don't really talk about it a lot, that my life had become unmanageable. My life started to become unmanageable by pursuing life from very selfish and self-centered constitution. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it, but I was constantly worried about me and what I could get and what I had and what I stood to lose and what you were going to take or what you were going to threaten. I was consumed with me and my life. Very, very rarely did I care about you unless I needed to use that as a tactic to get something it is I saw that I wanted from you. So I could be kind, I could be considerate, I could be nice, I could be, you know, jovial and witty and, you know, and all that. As long as you would buy that to give me what I intended to get from you. So I had this really screwed up way of thinking. And when your thinking is, influenced by selfishness and self-centeredness, fear, greed, lust, sloth, gluttony, irresponsibility, lack of discipline, no discipline, unaccountable. I mean, when my thinking is influenced by all those things that I harbor within, right? I can't help but have unmanageable thoughts. Because here's the deal. If my actions support the fact that they came from unmanageable thinking, if the culmination of my life, which was my past, and I get to the point of complete despair, if my life was a picture of devastation in the lives and all the relationships that I had on planet Earth, right? Mistrust, you know, disappointment, just terrorized in emotional fear with my family. That is the evidence of my thoughts. It starts here. I have to think about doing something that has a certain feeling and emotion behind it that's going to cause me to do what I do with people. So, you know, the four-step inventory is a masterful way of uncovering and discovering the reason my thinking is so unmanageable and produces such bad results, especially in relationships. Especially in relationships I have with other people. Right? Excuse me. So here we are. We talked about resentments last week. And the reason I get pissed off at people is because they don't give me what I want. Or they threaten to take what I already have. You see, fear is classified in two categories. It can be classified into fear that I'm not going to get something that I want. Or fear that I'm going to lose something I already have. Right? And they say we're driven by 100 forms of fear. Right? But they have us do this inventory, and they lay it out perfectly in this book. One of the pages has the three columns that are laid out here. So, you know, we looked at resentments last week. And mind you, we've come to two conclusions already. Right? Three pertinent ideas they talk in how it works. A, that we're alcoholic and couldn't manage our own life. Right? Know exactly what that means. Stand in my own skin and say, yes, I can't stop when I start and I can't stay stopped. Because of the obsession or this conversational lie I have with myself where I can delude myself into thinking it's going to be okay this time. I put it in my body and I'm down for the count. I've already established this internal condition I'm walking around with. Fear, resentment, bitterness, loneliness, feeling like a loser, feeling like a failure, right? Remorse, regret, all those things. Hiding them on the inside, pretending they don't exist on the outside. How you doing? Great. Fine, and be dying inside, right? So I've established these things, and I've established that no human being on planet Earth has been able to keep me stopped or relieve me of my alcoholism, right? See, it's all about staying stopped. It's all about seeking this spiritual awakening so I can obtain some balance in my life and some emotional sobriety. I can stop having to think I have to chase all these things in order to be happy. When all my happiness comes from Him. Right? So we get to this place and we're going to identify the things in my life that have really gotten my... That has destroyed everything. Primarily relationships, right? Resentments, feeling those things over and over again. You know, somebody wrongs me or threatens my personal instinct, right? My personal instinct, my health, my shelter, my reputation, my opinion of myself, whatever it is. But if you threaten that, we're going to have problems, right? I'm going to become angry. I'm going to have a response to that, a really negative response to that. If you threaten me financially, you know, we get the same thing. When you threaten my sex life, you know, when you interfere with her or you get in the way of that or something gets in the way of that, we respond. So they ask us to identify these things, right? In fear, it asks us why we have them. So we make our list. We make our list of fears, right? We remember we talked about how this formula is put down on paper. The first thing they ask us to do is make a list of the people. By the way, that list we will use for 8 and 9. This is why you don't throw a four-step inventory away, right? The list we make are the people that we're angry at. The second column, when we go back to the top to do the second exercise, we go to the name that we've written down, and we write why we were angry, right? We do that all the way down in conjunction with the list. Then we go to the top, and we identify what instincts of character, these appetites, these natural born, inborn instincts of character that help us survive are listed that are threatened. My personal instinct, my emotional instinct, my financial instinct, my sexual instinct, my ambitions. We identify what that resentment stemmed from, them threatening, right? And we go down the list and we identify that. Then we go back to the top and it says, as I read last week, as we turn back to the list, after we've identified those three things, the three things that are in that example on page 65, where they have the three columns, right? It says we turn back to the list after we've completed that. Why do we turn back to the list? Why do we go back to something that's not on that piece of paper in that template that they show us? It says, for it held the key to the future. So obviously there's things on here that are the key to our future that are not described on that list, on this paper, right? We got one, column two, column three. So now we're going to look at the things that are the key to our future, the key to our relationships being healthy, the things that will keep us in balance, the things that will have us stop trying to get more than we think we need, okay? So it says this. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. What angle have I been looking at those three columns? What you did to me. All my life, I was thinking with unmanageable thinking, getting terrible results, drinking and drugging in the process, and blaming you for all of it. I never looked at my part in this deal. I never was responsible for my part in this thing. Ever. I was convinced it was your fault. I was convinced if you guys straightened out, my life would be fine. Well, that's, I'm not going to use a word, but that's not right. It says that we began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. Because I'm going to tell you something. The people that we always thought did it to us, they're not going to change. So now they're going to flip the switch and they're going to have me look at me to see what decisions I made based on my selfishness, my self-centeredness, my self-consumption that later placed me in a position to be hurt. They're going to make me look at how I gained you. Right? They're going to make me look at how I was operating, the philosophy of life that I was living by. Right? It says this was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And then it tells us a prayer. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Down towards the middle, it says, referring to our list again, picks it back up again. Here we go again. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, self-centered, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Okay? I got to look at myself. I got to look at the part I played. If I'm resentful at somebody or something, I'm involved. Right? We're involved. Says, down at the bottom it says, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? So, like, on a couple of pages ago, it says that we made decisions based on self that later placed us in a position to be hurt, right? So we look at that. You know, what did I do to set the ball rolling? Okay? Susie, what did she do to make me angry? She cheated on me. And then she left me. What did she threaten? Well, my personal relationships for sure. My personal security. My financial security. I was all screwed up in the head. I couldn't work effectively. It affected me there. It affected me emotionally terribly. I was consumed with her. I was in a rage about this. I was in a rage about who she slept with. I was in a rage about everything. I couldn't think about anything else. Nothing else. So it affected every part of my life, right? So it affected me in every single category. Well, what did I do to set the ball rolling? Well, I was out all hours of the night, almost every night, doing what I wanted to do. Spending the money that I needed to, that I wanted to spend, instead of spending it on the bills and so forth at home. Treating her terribly. Coming home in a drunken rage. Raised in hell. Putting the fear of God in her. Terrifying her. Ignoring her. Abandoning her. Lying to her. Abusing her. Verbally. Mentally. Emotionally. Day after day after day. If you'd have done it to my sister, Joe, God have shot me. If you'd have done it to any dear friend of mine, there would be problems. And I did that to her, and I had to look at it. I had to put it down. And all of a sudden, the blame that I was putting on her started to be diminished and erased, seeing that I perpetrated this whole thing, that I'm the one that really set it up. Did everything that she do was right? No, but I'm looking at me now. This is my inventory. I don't want to drink again. So if I don't do this, I'm liable to drink again. That's a good reason, right? Well, what was the motivating force? What was the things in my constitution that drove me to do those things? To abandon her, to sleep around on her, to spend the money, to get high, to go to jail, and all the stuff that I did. What was it? It was greed. It was lust. It was selfishness. It was dishonesty. It was inconsideration. It was fear. It was all the defects that come to light. So what we're actually doing in this four-step inventory is we're getting all the information I need to see what needs to be worked on for me to go from who I had become into the man I want to be. Because for all those defects, there is an attribute. Dishonesty, honest, tell the truth, right? In consideration, be considerate. Don't do the things that you did to hurt people anymore. You know, and I'm going to tell you, for me to attempt to do that down the road in the ensuing steps to come, alone, I'm a terrible person to hold me in charge of good behavior. Terrible. I need the support group. I need to have men in my life that are going to hold me to the vision of becoming the man that I want to be and the one that I hope God created me to be, right? So I have to surround myself with people that are going to expect more from me than I would for me, right? And have a sponsor that I trust with my life, that I'm going to divulge all this information. We're going to drill down to really look at the exact nature of the wrong, to really get a picture on what emanates from this guy when I show up on the scene. What's really lurking in the background when I'm in relationship with you. Right? So we look at the resentments. We get them all out. Then they go to fear. And we reviewed our fears. We do the same thing. We list why we have them. We list our fears top to bottom. The next column, we list why we have them. Why do I have these fears? You know, why do I have the fears of not being, or being rejected? I think a lot of us have that when we get here. Of being rejected. You may not like me. You may think I'm the scumbag I really think I am myself. You may look at me as a loser if you reject me. Why are you rejecting me? What is it about me you don't like? And then I go into this whole mental thing. And what does it affect? What does it threaten? It threatens my emotional security. It threatens my personal security, my personal relationships with you, how I view me, my personal security, right? My ambitions, God, if she doesn't like me, or if they don't like me, or if the boss, you know, if this guy that's interviewing me for this really great job just really has a cold shoulder and doesn't pay much attention, and, you know, him and I, and I'm out the door, what is it about me he doesn't like? I thought I was pretty up there. You know, I'm pretty good. So I get all this self, like, condemnation going on, right? Fear. I'm not going to get the job. I'm going to lose my dignity, right? So, I mean, you know, fear touches everything. You know, when we get to the next column, we talk about what it affected, and then we ask ourselves, well, why do we have that fear? Why do I have that fear of rejection? You know, what did I do to set the ball rolling and have in establishing that fear of rejection? Because I was such a fraud the whole time. Every time I showed up with you, I was somebody that I thought you wanted me to be. So that you'd like me, so that you'd think I was popular, so you thought I was witty and educated and successful and all this garbage that I really wasn't. Right? I was putting on the masquerade for you. So if you really saw who I was, you'd reject me. So I'm constantly walking around in fear. Right? I have to identify all this, because if I don't, they say I'm going to drink again. And it's not just that. If I don't change this, I'm going to continue to be it. I'm going to continue to operate like that. Right? So we look at our fears. We look at our sexual harms. You know, and believe it or not, a lot of these can duplicate. They can go from the resentment list. She can go from the resentment list. I resent her. I'm really pissed off at her for what she did to me. I really fear her. She has a lot of stuff on me. Put me in jail, right? I've harmed her terribly, right? Sexually, you know. I didn't get what I wanted. I'd play the cold shoulder. I'd go out. I'd abandon her for a couple of days. I'd go out and do my thing and cheat on her and do this and that and the other. I harmed her good. Harmed them good. So, you know, if I can put this all together, I'm going to get a very clear picture of actually what drives me. And the whole thing leads to that last column, that last thing that we identify, which is my defects of character. The very things I'm going to need God's help and removal from. I've got to get rid of these, or I'm a done guy. I'm a dead man walking. Right? So we do this thing, and we get a clear picture of who you get when I show up on the scene. And listen, let me tell you something. At this point in my life, and I believe this is really important, you know, that gift of desperation is so important, that I have to get to the place where I want that guy to die. I can't stand him. I look at this carnage and I look at this wreckage, and there's no wonder I'm the loneliest person on the planet. There's no wonder I feel like a complete loser. Am I? Of course not. God doesn't create that. I fabricated it all. I put it all together. I made me into who I was. Nobody made me do that stuff. Nobody made me, you know, think all this other stuff was important. Nobody made me drink the way I drank. I did that because I felt like such a loser as I had that internal condition that was eating me alive. This is how we get rid of the internal condition. We identify what it is. We identify what the source was. And it's primarily selfishness and self-centeredness, right? They say it kills us. And there's no way to be rid of it without God's help. And I desire to correct it. I have to go through this period of correction. You know, I've always felt like this whole program offers everything you could possibly want out of life and humanity. And I mean, it's Psychologically, it's one of the best things I've ever seen in my life. But this deal is a caterpillar to the butterfly. This is somewhere I come in and do a little rearrangement. You know, make you know, do a little bit better in that area. No. This is aiming for the best I can become. This is aiming for the best I can be, right? So I have all these defects, and I have this whole thing laid out. I'm ready to talk to somebody about it. I'm ready to confess. You know, confession's been going on for a long, long time. You want to lighten your soul? You want to lighten your heart? Tell the truth and expose the lie. It'll do it every time. You want to feel heavy and defeated and negative and broken? Harbor them. I've always said to my guys, you can do anything you want to do as long as you're willing to pay the price. But I say this, we paid way too many prices. It's time to live free, right? It's time. Everybody in here has the same opportunity. Not everybody will choose to go for it. Because some of us think some areas of our life are still working. You just drink a little too much or drug a little too much. They say that the only thing that will persuade us and beat us into a state of being reasonable about this thing and truthful about it is booze and drugs. The horrific beating administered by alcohol and drugs. There's nothing I can say that's going to get you there. Nothing I can say that's going to light that fire. The only thing I can hope to do is identify with those of you that are truly wanting to change their life and need it put in context where you understand it, right? So once we're ready to do these things, once we've completed this four step and we've eviscerated ourselves and we're hemorrhaging, it's time to talk to somebody about it. Now, the person that would be most advantageous is our sponsor. For us to pick a sponsor is not a casual thing. It's not something that we do because our halfway house is enforcing it. They're enforcing it for good reason. But for us to pick one based on that reason is not an appropriate reason. This person, this man or woman that's going to sponsor you, is literally going to take you from a place of complete devastation into a level of life you've never known. He's going to take your hand and put it in God's hand. That's a tremendous responsibility. That's an awesome responsibility. And if you get vibes that that's not quite happening the way it should be, and they're not teaching from this manual, turn around and get another one. Don't waste your time. It's your life. It's your life. Somebody told me when you pick a sponsor, you want to pick somebody that has the character attributes that you want to have in yourself. I didn't have any attributes in me. I had seen things that I thought were appealing and that were desirable, but they didn't exist in me. I was a liar, a manipulator, a deceiver, consumed with me, consumed with my world, terrible lust issues. I mean, I didn't have really any attributes. And had they shown up, it was only a tool to get what I wanted. So I had to be taught. I had to be redeveloped. I had to be reborn. I had to take this on like I'm ready to let the past go. Give me a new way of life. And that's what's possible here. And your sponsor, that individual, if you men and women are sponsoring in here, it is your responsibility to do it by the manual. Anybody else's way is simply an opinion. It may be BB, CC, DD, but it's not AA. This is AA, and guess what they say? They guarantee us the desired result, the spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. You don't simply pick somebody because they happen to have a past just like yours. Oh man, they told my story. Great. What's the story they're telling now? If they get up behind the podium and 45 minutes later they're just getting out of high school, that's not the guy. If they open up and say, and they start talking about this and how they developed a relationship with God and how they went through this transformation through this step process, that's your guy or your woman. This is life and death. People are dying at unbelievable rates today. Unbelievable, because they come in here, they'll go to some meetings, they'll get some relief, they'll make some friends, get some, you know, camaraderie going on, some relationship, they'll feel a little bit better. But then they'll do nothing to change, and they go back out. It is really hard to come into AA and pretend you're not the dirtbag that you were when you got here, when you're still the dirtbag. You know what I mean? Like, and I say that for me. I'm not calling anybody a dirtbag. It's for you to call yourself. But when I would come into AA and exist with untreated alcoholism, I would pretend I was the nicest guy in the world. God, I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to think I was a somebody because I felt like such a nobody. So everything was a fraud. And I'd stick around. I'd keep going to meetings and I'd be more disturbed until ultimately the casino or the other places that I would go to or the things that I would chase to try and make me feel whole or feel like a somebody stopped working. And the internal condition got so chaotic and in conflict and I couldn't conceal it anymore. I drank and drugged every time. Right? It's detox, retox. So I needed to discuss this thing with somebody and they needed to hold me accountable. See, I told you about the experience with my mother, about when I stole her heirloom wedding ring from generations before in her family. My mom's 96 today. My father was a stone-cold alcoholic, but a wonderful man, very religious man, went to church every day, harbored serious resentments about that. I had 5 sisters and a brother, so we had a fairly large family. And he just was not much of a professional guy. I mean, he just wasn't, you know, he just didn't have that talent. He was pampered as a child, and, you know, his family had money, and, you know, it's kind of like our socioeconomic standing went from here to, like, the ground over time because everything was spent, but no development happened with him. But he was a God-fearer. He loved God. And I blamed him for my alcoholism for a lot of years. You know, I didn't have a real good relationship with my father. I mean, it was superficial at best, but I held him responsible. I really didn't. I mean, it would really piss me off when he'd go to church and he'd pay more attention to God than he would about going out and making a buck to support his family. How freaking selfish is that? God, I think about those things. And it just grinds my heart to think that I could have been so selfish and so self-absorbed to think that of the man that was doing everything he possibly could to hold his family together and to make a life for them. And he did. He sent us all through, you know, private schools and this and that. And always had food on the table. And we never not wanted for anything. You know, I may have been pissed off because I didn't get my little Stingray bicycle, you know, like the kids down the street had. Again. And then when I went to treatment, where it was either you get out of West Palm Beach, they were kicking me out of the city, or you go to treatment, well, what do you think I did? I said, well, okay, I'll go to treatment. You know, I didn't want to leave the parachute. And when I was in treatment, I'll never forget this. As it's Visitor's Day, and my father, a loving, very loving man, very compassionate man of God. I mean, just a man of God, you know, and just had all those, just that love from him. He was walking up and down the sidewalk, not quite knowing where to go. We were in a particular part of the treatment development, and he was probably just, you know, he was smoking a cigarette, and he was going to go and ask where to go to visit me because he cared about me. And I was so embarrassed, I didn't want to even call over to him. I didn't want people to know that was my father. My God. How unbelievably selfish, self-consumed. Many years I cried. It was so hurtful to me when I finally recovered from this thing and I got a different perspective, this whole different pair of glasses on how to look at life, that I could do that to him. He never did anything like that to me. I was very fortunate because my sponsor, John, at the time, he had put this, he developed and wrote this script for a nine-step inventory beyond the grave type of guided meditation that we do at the Wednesday night study group from time to time, where we're able to meet in the spirit world and make those amends. But he died before I could ever do it with him face to face. Talk about regret. Talk about remorse. Talk about loss. That hurts us, people. It eats us alive. And I'm not just talking about that. I'm talking about all of it. If we don't do this, we live with that. So I did that exercise and I made amends with my father, and I've had one of the most incredible relationships that I could possibly have with my father. And we will meet again. So everything's possible with this. But I can promise you this, none of this is possible without it. Us left to our own devices thinking we know what we need to do is a death sentence. It's just another nail in the coffin. So I had to drill down on that. I had to drill down on just not, you know, I had to talk about the fact that, yeah, I had stolen from them. I had to talk about, you know, the harms. I had to talk about what it affected, what they threatened. But I also had to talk about the hurt. How did I hurt people emotionally? How did I hurt their whole way of being? Distrust, abandonment, shaming them, gossiping about them, slandering them. What, to make me feel better? To make me right? We can develop into some really maniacal people. And we have to get this stuff out if we're going to live to good measure. If we're going to be the person that comes in the door of Alcoholics Anonymous, exuding their principles so that the person that's dying sees us and sees that and wants what we have there. What is it that this man had that I wanted? John Williams. He was authentic. He was who he said he was. He was his boundaries. He was his principles. That attracted me. The fact that he could go up and dance in front of a room full of people, looking like an idiot and not giving a damn about it at all. Not thinking about what people thought about him. He wasn't attached to it. Still isn't. Integrity. I always thought integrity had to do with structure stuff in a building. Like the Constitution was a document in Washington, D.C. I pretend I knew what you're talking about, but I was so ignorant when I got here, I didn't have a clue. Right? Integrity. What is that? Keeping your word. He said, Joe, he says, the only thing you've got that's worth anything is your word. I was the kind of guy that never encountered anybody ever asking me to pick them up at 3 a.m. at the airport in the morning. Ever. Because they knew they couldn't count on me. They knew I didn't have a word to keep. Trust. Who's going to trust me with their children? Who's going to trust me with their financials? Think about it. This is what I had become. This is the God. This is the individual who I had become. This isn't what he had intended. But everything that we go through, everything that we experience, everything that we encounter up along these lines to the point of getting here is absolutely necessary. I can't be the victim anymore. I was a consummate victim when I got here. Wah, 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 it's your fault. Blah, blah, blah. The world sucks. This sucked. That sucked. Everything sucked. And the only people that would buy it were other victims. So I had to seek you guys out. It's like a conspiracy. I'll buy your doo-doo if you buy my doo-doo. So I was looking for people to buy my junk. Somebody that had their act together certainly wasn't going to listen to me. And I didn't know how to express anything else. So we talked about these things. We talked about who I had. We talked about the things that lived within me, the things that motivated me to do what I did, and the things that I did to people beyond just the harm. And we got it all out there in the presence of God. We invited God in before we began through prayer, and we did the deal. I don't know, it was probably 4 or 5 hours, whatever it was. But the book says we must be prepared for a long talk. That means an entire talk. That means the whole deal, not increments. I'm not gonna ask my guys to eviscerate themselves and start hemorrhaging, and then we'll put it together a little bit at a time. Let's do some today, and we'll do some next week, and then hopefully in the process you won't pick up a drink. Because I'm so damn selfish, I don't want to give you that amount of time. Let's just do it when it's convenient for me. Not the way to do things. In my opinion, that's an opinion. But the book says a long talk. I can only draw a conclusion what that means. And from that point forward, we get the first timeline in the book. Because everything is next. It doesn't take long to read the work, come to the conclusion that I can't stop when I start and I can't stay stopped. No human power has been able to keep me stopped. And that God could and would if I seek him, and I must make that decision to seek him. Well, that doesn't take a whole heck of a long time. And then they say, once I decide to seek him, immediately, at once, now, next, I do the inventory, which we just talked about. Then beyond this, they say, we're prepared to do this thing, right? We do that, and the book says, then we go home, and we find a quiet place for an hour. That's the first timeline in the whole deal. An hour. And we review the first 5 proposals. We review that the foundation that I've built, the absolute convincement, being convinced that I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict and I can't manage my own life. My thoughts, my manageability is off. That no human power has been able to keep me. I get convinced of these things. And that God could and would if he were sought, right? Knowing that I'm going to be the biggest obstacle in that pursuit. My selfishness, my self-centeredness. Once I make that decision to seek him, the thing that's going to derail me is me. None of you, right? I do this inventory. Did I do a good job? Did I leave anything out? Secrets will get you drunk every time. Every time. How do you live sober and clean and be dirty? That's why, you know, I kind of challenge people on what job they've got once they're engaged in this thing. You going to work every day and lying all day? Or bending the truth or manipulating people? Maybe we'll take another look at that. It creates damage on the inside when we do stuff like this and pretend that we're not. That's the worst part, right? So then we make, you know, we're through this deal, and now it's time. We've got everything we need. We've got the list for our A step, right? We've got the central column for all our appetites and instincts of character. We've got the last column of defects of character that we're going to work on for 6 and 7. So we've got everything that we need in our 4-step for 6, 7, 8, and 9. Got it? We've got the blueprint for success. We've got the blueprint on what needs to be changed. We've got the literal path to take to have this spiritual awakening. Now we just need somebody to guide us there, and we need a group of people around us to support us in our vision. Who do you want to become? That's the question. Next week we'll talk about that. Thanks.
Have another round of applause for Joe. I've asked Fred to do our secretary report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the Severn tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Nathan to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Nate, and I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for a lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consistently, we have recovered.
Thanks. 1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You can just stand up for a moment. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please meet them up front after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting on the third floor in the same building, where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Before I go, we have a quick reminder. There's a 75-foot no smoking or vape zone in front of the doors. If you guys can just wait till you get to the end over here on the left side. Thank you, guys, and I'll see you next week.
We have all tonight's sessions and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. We're about to close up on step 11 and enter into step 12, working with others. And to those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer in our seats. Our Father. See you all Monday or Thursday. Godspeed.
I am desperate. desperately in need of restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Cause on my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you, I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. Possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. Oh. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. Oh. Cause they won't profit me anything in the end.
Shining through. crying. You bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope you will smile.
Bum, 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 bum